It's the diagnosis that no one wants to receive, but one that an estimated 1.3 million people face every year. Breast cancer is the most prevalent cancer in the world. It strikes women and men of every age and race. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and Arizona Spotlight is proud to bring you Voices for the Cure, an opportunity for some of the countless people whose lives and loved ones have been touched by breast cancer to share their stories of courage, love, and hope. Soul and mind inseparable from body. That's one of the beliefs that Joanna Frew shared with me when I talked with her about her book, A Short Story About a Big Healing. Joanna is an artist, author, and teacher with a background in art history and philosophy, and she drew on all of this knowledge to do more than survive her breast cancer. She thrived. Today, she credits her breast cancer with making her more compassionate and with helping to make her a healthier person. For Joanna, one of the first steps was finding the right way to talk about it.
The metaphors are very interesting. You know, like the fight thing, which I, as an academic, I'd say I'm critiquing it in here, but the fight metaphor and the battle metaphor, they don't work for me at all. Not at all. A love metaphor works. But the thing is, the metaphors that are used are really, really important, and I think we need more metaphors or more kinds of language.
In your book, you reveal that your own spirituality and your friends helped you,
yeah.
And there was that visualization. Mm-hmm. Where you talked about and the woman touching your breast and saying, I see arid earth.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, very vividly spoke of the power of spirituality to help you focus and to help you invent your own language or your own metaphor.
Absolutely. And then later in the book, I think it was between mammogram and biopsies, I sort of knew that I would have a double mastectomy, that would be my choice. And then this image of the androgyne came to mind, and the androgyne that I was so in love with when I was a graduate student and studying 19th century art and literature, and this figure of extraordinary power and beauty. And so I felt very lucky that I had that image, that it fascinated me, and that it came to help me, you know. And to me, that's part of spirituality. And of course, the androgyne is a symbol of wholeness. Male, female, and, you know, just in being male, female, masculine, feminine, being an image of just unity and power. And so it's like, wow, that was great, you know.
The best of both worlds, and ideally.
Exactly. And then to me, an image of great beauty also.
People often like to mock something like a degree in philosophy as not being applicable to modern life. But you were in a situation where you needed philosophy.
You know, one can find that everything that you've been and done in life, they come into play, and they can be very helpful, or for me, certainly. And so being an art historian is really, really helpful to me in this, in terms of images of beauty and my prior work in terms of studying theory and philosophy and all of that as a scholar was really, really important, as well as the spirituality, you know. And I practice meditation, and I do yoga, and saying I do yoga is rather mild. I mean, I've practiced yoga since I was in my 20s. And all kinds of aspects of yoga, and that's really important. So yoga philosophy, as well as, you know, the postures and meditation, all of those aspects are things that really helped me.
When we did our television interview, I asked you a question about how having an illness like this can be especially traumatizing to someone who does embrace spirituality and who does embrace aesthetics, because you're so cut off from those things. At the worst part of it for you, Joanna, how did it alter you, the way you related to the concepts of beauty and aesthetics?
Well, I gotta say, Mark, that I was never cut off from beauty and aesthetics. They are so part of my life. They are so part of who I am, so much a part of my work and my professional life over 30 years or more. They were part of my life when I was a little girl. I mean, being feminine and beautiful and... But then becoming an adult and then becoming a mature adult, that even more so, to put beauty into the world is to put a revolution into the world. And people don't think about beauty in that regard, but I do. I'm a beauty activist. And it's not simply a matter of personal beauty. or other people's personal beauty. I think that even in the great terror between diagnosis and surgery, that the spiritual and the beauty were always there. And a very strange experience that I had was at some point then, it's like, I felt really sexy. I was gonna, you know, get a mastectomy and I felt really sexy. It's like, well, I don't know, why is that happening? I don't know, but it was happening. I think I'll feel it. I think it's a really good thing to feel, you know? And there was some intense experience going to have chemotherapy. I always dressed up for that.
And was that after the surgery?
Yeah, it was after the surgery for me. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, you described the period of great terror as being between diagnosis and surgery.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about that. When you woke up, how was it that the terror wasn't there anymore?
You know, after surgery, it's like, I'm on the side of cure. I'm on the side of cure after surgery. That was like really clear to me, and everybody was there with me. Okay, I'm on the side of cure. So the terror was into like the morning we were driving to surgery, you know, and... you know, you ask about the terror, to feel something like that. It's like, I'm sitting here, I'm closing my eyes. It's like, can I even re-feel that? I don't even know. It's an experience I have never, ever had before. I'm almost at a loss to talk about it. It's so extreme. And ask me something else, because sure, then maybe something else will come up about that terror. Ask your questions about it in different ways.
Sure. How about the old aphorism is information is power. And some people, if they're diagnosed with an illness, they're immediately going to go online and they're going to look up case histories and they're going to look up treatments, and it's going to make them feel better. There are others of us, and I would count myself in this group, who would find that experience excruciating. It's hard enough to deal with the idea that I'm sick. To think about the other people who are sick, to think about what other people have experienced, would be overwhelming to me. How did you approach that in terms of your informational input about the illness when you were dealing with the
cancer? Oh, I didn't go online. I didn't go online to look stuff up. I didn't want people sending me anything. I didn't want to hear about, oh, my mother's experience, or, oh, Sister Sue's experience, or, no, this is my experience. And that is key for me. This is my experience. These are my choices. And they are not necessarily unique, but they are unique to me, because everybody's choices are unique, and they need to be. And so also I was aware that some people going through the terror phase, that they would ask other people's opinions, or they would be asking, and they would feel very, very confused. And I understand how they can. But, you know, you ask how I dealt with the terror. I had tremendous clarity during this. So even during the terror, it's like I always knew this is what I'm going to do. Like the surgeon said, and she spent a long time talking about lumpectomies. And she was great. But I chose mastectomies instead, you know.
Why did that seem like the right choice for you?
It seemed like a right choice to me because of how I perceived, and I'm saying perceived, how I perceived or knew in a spiritual, intuitive, gut, heart way, how I knew, how I perceived the cancer in each breast. And it also had to do with aesthetics. I wanted to be the same on both sides. And had there been lumpectomies, I don't think it would have been. I couldn't see it in my mind. I couldn't see what that would look like. Whereas bilateral mastectomy, I could see. And also, I found out from a good friend, someone who has become a good friend, who had also had a breast cancer experience, and she had the same surgeon, which I didn't know until I told her I was getting this surgeon. And she said, oh, that's who I had, you know. And the surgeon is known for doing beautiful, beautiful, elegant incisions. So I totally trusted the team I chose. And from the primary physician, who is a naturopath, to the surgeon, to the oncologist, to the people who were surrounding them or whoever they put together. So that was major. And those choices, again, very, very clear for me. It was very, very clear.
I'd like to point out, Joanna, that you just used the words beautiful, elegant, and incision in the same sentence.
Uh-huh.
Do you think that that's a sentence you might have composed 10 years ago?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Because I didn't think about surgery. It was not something that I thought about in terms of my work or that I needed to think about in terms of my life and that I thought about in terms of other people. No. And indeed, in the book, I say when I have a little thing and I talk about the incisions and how they look and, you know, how they healed. And I say, beauty marks, not battle scars, because people talk about them as battle scars. And that didn't sound right to me. This was not a battle for me. This was a work of love. This was a work of love. And getting back to the spiritual, this was a work of love, and this was a work of self-love. You know, it's a time when you got to focus on yourself totally. Now, for some people, that's very hard. If you're a mother, if you're living with various kinds of people, this can be very, very hard. For me, I live by myself. And I have surrounded myself with really terrific people. So it was easy for me, and I love solitude. So spending time in that world of self-love and then feeling love from other people and then feeling so grateful and giving them love and then having my heart grow and so feeling compassion for people also. So all of that was part of the healing. I keep coming back to your question about the terror. You know, you sort of keep saying, how do you maintain yourself in terror, you know? How do you maintain your sort of emotional integrity in terror?
I guess I look for these things from people because it's the only solace or the only insurance that I can give myself.
Well, I tell you, you know, love is the answer.
There's a prominent quote in your book, gardens are like the heart. When you love them, they bloom.
Ah.
The truth there for you is the nature of the heart. You compare the garden to the heart.
I don't know where I do this.
It's in your book.
Okay. I don't know where I do it.
A lot of people would have compared the heart to a garden. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, how interesting.
So the reason that rang the bell for me is because you were saying gardens are like the heart. When you love them, they bloom. Assuming that I accept and understand that that is the nature of the heart.
I think that must have come to me very unconsciously to do it that way. I feel great sympathy with plants and flowers. And they're great solace to me, and they come up over and over and over again in my work.
That was cancer survivor Joanna Frew, author of A Short Story About a Big Healing. You can listen to more of our conversation and many other stories on the Voices for the Cure page at azpm.org. Voices for the Cure is produced in association with Susan G. Komen for the Cure, Southern Arizona. More information is available online at komensaz.org.